just felt like my throat was just getting inflamed to the point where my throat was like, I'm done working. You need to like do some things to nurse me back to health because I'm like not okay. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the Oh My Allergies podcast. This is your hostess with the mostest, Valencia. And if you are new here, the Oh My Allergies podcast is a podcast about all things allergies. Whether you have food allergies, seasonal allergies, skin allergies, or even your pet has allergies, Oh My Allergies is a safe space for discussions for those that need a bit of advice and support from someone who understands their struggle. Let's learn how to navigate life and learn how to thrive with our allergies together. What's up, Oh My Allergies fam? Welcome back to the podcast. It is Tuesday, so happy Tuesday, guys. If you're new, I'm Valencia. Really nice to meet you. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you're subscribed on your favorite podcast platform of choice. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, just any platform you can listen to your favorite podcast on. Also, make sure that you stop, drop, roll, and rate the podcast. Hopefully your rating is 5 stars. Make sure you leave the show a review because it helps with being able to grow our community and reach new peeps like yourselves. Follow us on Instagram. Our Instagram is at Oh My Allergies. My Instagram is at Oh My Valencia, so follow me on there. And just keep on sharing the podcast with people you know or don't know. Now, today's episode is all about having a sore throat. Most people know about that feeling that you get when you start to like notice the first signs of a sore throat, like with your throat feeling a bit scratchy, or it may hurt to swallow or to eat. And that discomfort honestly just gets worse as you start to really like worry like whether or not you're sick with like the cold or you have the flu, things like that. But is that always the case? Because like a lot of people tend to assume that a sore throat means an infection, like a cold, or that you have strep throat or like the flu. But does a sore throat always equal an infection? That's pretty much what we're going to be talking about today in its relation with allergies. This episode was actually inspired by something that actually happened to me more recently, and I just thought that it would be good to talk about it and do a deeper dive into it more with like allergy season not just being just a season anymore, and it's more turning into being perennial and like year-round nowadays. But before we get into today's topic, you guys know I gotta talk about what's been going on with me. So today we are kicking off a new season of the podcast, season 5. It's honestly so crazy to think that this podcast has been going on 4 or 5 seasons, especially since this podcast has only been around for like 3 or so years, which again is kind of also kind of crazy to think about. But yeah, welcome back. I know it's been a minute since there's been a new episode. Last season, towards the end, it was kind of a little bit chaotic. There was a lot going on towards the end of last season. So like towards the end of last year, early this year, there was just a lot going on. There was just a period of time where I was dealing with stuff at work and personal stuff, dealing with burnout, lack of creativity with the direction of this podcast. And then there were also some moments sprinkled in there where I got sick and didn't really feel well at all. There was a period of time where I had like a sore throat. It literally hurt to swallow, to breathe, to talk, to laugh, which is a major problem if you have a podcast. So that is kind of bringing you guys up to speed a little bit in terms of why there was kind of a little bit of start, break for towards the end of last season / last year, early this year. But other than that, more recently, what's been going on with me, I had been watching a lot of college softball, was really annoyed about the fact that none of the teams I was rooting for won the whole Women's College World Series. I was initially rooting for Clemson, Texas, UGA, Tennessee, UCLA, and Stanford, I think those are the only teams when like regionals started. And the Clemson and Oklahoma game was epic. It was epic. Oh my goodness. That game was so good. I was so mad that Clemson was actually beating Oklahoma at some point, and then they lost it at the end, which was really disappointing. I was like, what are you doing? But those girls, they had so much fight in them and earned the respect of the Oklahoma staff and team, which was so good to see because Clemson's program has accomplished like so much in such a short amount of time. But in terms of some of the other teams that I was rooting for, I was really mad that UCLA did not even make it out of regionals. Clemson went to regionals and super regionals and then just didn't make it into like the official Women's College World Series round of games. UCLA didn't even make it out of regionals. I was like, what is going on? To be honest, that game was kind of embarrassing. I just couldn't believe that Grand Canyon University beat them. I was like, what is going on? I was so disappointed, and it was such an upset to just say the absolute least. And then out of the teams that I was rooting for that were still around, I was rooting for Stanford and then Tennessee. Those are the only teams that made it into the final 4-8 teams that were going into the Women's College World Series. I knew that if a team could beat Oklahoma, it could be Stanford. And even though Stanford challenged Oklahoma and really made the Oklahoma staff actually have to like think and be strategic, I was just so mad that Stanford could not close it. It just sucked eggs. And then after that, I was like, okay, I started rooting for Florida State because throughout the regular season, Florida State has just been one of those teams that I've watched. I'm kind of like a half fan of Florida State. Like, I know players by name. I'm familiar with their program. I think that they're consistent for, like, the most part and have been around for, like, so long. But when I think of my favorite softball teams, it's just not the first team that comes to mind. But I like them. It's just not the first team that comes to mind. But when Florida State and Oklahoma went up against each other in the Champ Series, I was like, oh, Mac Leonard, the typical, you know, first baseman for Florida State, turn pitcher this year, was doing a great job at stopping Oklahoma's bats. But then the coach took her out prematurely, in my opinion. And that's literally when the game changed. It was just really hard to watch after that. Did Oklahoma blow Florida State out of the water? No. Is OU the better team statistically speaking? Not in everything. I think individual players on other teams are better than OU's players on an individual level, statistically. But when they come together, that's when Oklahoma can be very dangerous. I was happy that during the Women's College World Series, Oklahoma's bats were not cracking like I've seen them in the past. They were winning like 3-2 or like 5-4. Except for the game when they played against Tennessee. They blew them out the water. Tennessee was not ready to play them that day. But other than that, like teams that were like really, really good, they weren't like beating them like 10-4 or like 14-2 or, you know, like something outrageous. I could literally just talk about softball for a long time. If you are a softball fan, you probably appreciate this. And if you're not, you're probably just confused. Honestly, I probably should just have a podcast about it. But now that college softball season is like over, I've been watching some of the pro level softball games as well as the men's college World Series games, which, by the way, have been so good. Highly recommend watching those. Literally the day before I'm recording this episode, when I say Florida, like University of Florida Gators, literally slapped LSU in the face and stomped on them and then put them in the ground. Like that's literally what happened. The score's so embarrassing. The score was 24-4. You just kind of had to see the game to see how the heck that even happened. It was just at one point I stopped watching when they got up to, I think, 20. I was like, I can't watch this anymore. It hurts so much. It got to a point where if a Florida Gator player hit a ball and it went deep, and normally in a game like this, you would see players in the outfield like diving for the ball to try to get the out. When it really got to double digits, like probably when the score got to 17 that Florida Gators had, and then LSU I think maybe had like 2 or 3, LSU, they just stopped diving for the ball. It was just one dude got a grand slam on the Florida Gators team, which pretty much means that all the bases were loaded, and then they got a home run, the person that was up to bat. So they brought literally all three people that were on base home, including themselves. It was just a mess. It was entertaining until it wasn't. So there's going to be a game 3, and I'm excited to see that. And that will probably have happened by the time this episode is posted. But I have just been watching a lot of softball and baseball. Also, I recently watched a few movies. I watched the latest Avatar movie, which, by the way, I really forgot how long those movies are. I was just like, 3 hours for a movie? Gosh, like that's intense. It was a great movie. But 3 hours, though, I don't know about that. But I also saw some movies on Netflix that I just randomly came across and did not know what I was getting myself into until watching those movies. I saw the Extraction movies with Chris Hemsworth that's done by the Russo brothers. And let's just say I was not prepared physically and emotionally for those movies. Like, I love a good action movie. I like a good action and adventure movie, but gosh, those movies were a bit too much. A bit too much. The amount of action, it was just too much. And the fact that this type of stuff probably happens in real life to an extent just adds to the anxiousness that I felt while watching that movie. And it's so crazy that, like, as you get older, your taste in movie genres change. And so just things that you've been able to watch in the past, you might not be able to get through them anymore. And overall, I thought Chris Hemsworth did a great job in them. And I thought that the first movie was better than the second. I can see why some people were like, oh, like the second movie wasn't as great. But then from watching him in those movies, Chris Hemsworth, I realized that I think that the roles that he's doing outside of like the Avenger and like the Thor movies is him trying to channel his inner version of Brad Pitt. And I did not make this connection until I was watching his movies and then realizing he has moments where he favors Brad Pitt. And then from talking with my mother, I was like, wow, I definitely see it. I see it. It's clicking. It's making perfect sense. But I have been watching movies, which is new for me. I've not been really watching movies that much until recently, and I'm kind of excited about it. So if you're looking for new things to be able to watch on like Netflix, Disney Plus, whatever, highly recommend watching those things. But yeah, that's pretty much what's been going on with me. So I can get right into some of my foodie legs lately. So the first food I want to talk to you guys about is raspberries. I truly believe that raspberries are going to be my fruit of the summer. I just love them. They're so good. I feel like right now it's the best time to get them because they are in season, I believe. And I just like them because they're not too sweet, like, but there's a little bit of sweetness enough for you to be able to think that you're having fruit because you actually are having fruit. I don't know why you would think you're having fruit when you are. And I just really like the texture of them, especially like when they're like fresh from the refrigerator and they're so cold. Oh my goodness gracious. I love a good raspberry, like a really nice firm raspberry. Tastes so good. Highly recommend trying raspberries if you've never tried them before. I feel like raspberries get a bad rap from the standpoint of like when you think of berries, you tend to think of like strawberries and blueberries. And then another fruit that I really like are blackberries as well. But lately I've just been having raspberries and then some blueberries every once in a while, as well as like some apples every once in a while. I'm not a big fruit person, so me having this much fruit, even though it's not a lot of fruit, is kind of a big deal for me, just because I've been hesitant with its sugar content because fruit has so much sugar in it, and I've just been very sugar conscious for health reasons. But I have been really liking those things lately as snacks, so I've been enjoying those. And then another foodie like that I have been really enjoying, it's from the brand Wild Planet. It's their Skipjack Wild Tuna No Salt Added. Oh my goodness, I love this tuna so much. I typically stock up on it when it is on sale because their tuna from Wild Planet can cost a good amount of money. But I really like their tuna because not only is it sustainably caught, but I really like the fact that there's no salt added to it. If you look at the nutrition facts for just tuna in general, there tends to be so much added salt. And I've just been really conscious of trying not to eat a lot of salt because of what it does to my body personally. And I found that eating foods that are lower in sodium has just worked out for me and my body. And so in the whole can, there's like only 30 milligrams of sodium, which is like so good. I think it's like either 30 per serving. I think it's 30 per serving. And then I think 45 in the whole entire can, which compared to like the cans of tuna that I've gotten in the past that are like 300 milligrams worth of sodium in them, that is drastically different. But I also like the fact that it's 100% pole in line. I also really like that because of the type of tuna that they catch, it's lower in mercury. So I just feel like it's a really good brand that I just really like getting their products from. And it's so cool because I think their tuna that they use, they use tuna steaks and they're hand cut and hand packed. So highly recommend if you can have tuna. There's so much protein in a can of them, a lot of omega-3s as well. So if you've not tried their products before, I highly recommend because their stuff is like really good and really good quality. It's just sadly, you have to pay a pretty penny for good quality food, which always throws me off. But if you're able to try it, I highly recommend it. But those are the things that I have been really liking lately. I've been using the tuna to make like tuna salads and like putting that tuna on my salad, or like making tuna and having it with some sort of like crisp or like crackers or things like that. So I just think it's a really nice little summer treat. But those are the things I've been liking lately in terms of foodie likes. So with that being said, let's get right into the allergy news. So this week's allergy news article is titled, "Kids Who Live With Pets May Be Less Prone to Food Allergies. Recent Study Shows. Here's What an Allergist Says." So a recent PLOS-1 study that was published in March found that exposure to cats and dogs when a child is still in its mother's womb / uterus or just a few months old was associated with roughly a 14% lower risk of them having a food allergy later on in life. And the strongest benefit was seen in kids who lived with dogs that were kept inside of the house and for families who owned pets during a child's younger years and early infancy. And owning dogs during a child's early development portion of their life was associated with a lower risk of milk, egg, and nut allergies, according to this new study, while owning a cat seemed to reduce wheat, egg, and soybean allergies. I think it's interesting the different types of studies that are now being done around the area of allergies and food allergies should just be so interesting. Like, I think it's interesting that someone was like, I wonder if there's like a relationship between households that have pets and households that don't have pets and whether or not that affects a child's allergies earlier on in their development. I just think it's so interesting. I definitely probably wouldn't have thought that from like a food allergy standpoint, maybe possibly from like an environmental allergen standpoint, from like if a child is used to being in an environment where there's like that pet dander, the dust and things like that, then maybe that might be an interesting topic to like dive into if that's not been done already by studies. But to look at it from a food allergy lens, that's the thing that when I saw this article online, it kind of really made me be like, like this is so interesting. And also further in the article, they talk about with an allergist, you know, wanting to get an allergist's thoughts on this particular study. And so the allergist in this article, her name is Dr. Carolyn Kuwait, and She was talking about how the study's findings should pretty much just be taken with a grain of salt, as it was just observational and the diagnosis of food allergies was based entirely on a questionnaire that was completed by parents, rather than there being like test results to be able to make hypothesis and being able to draw conclusions based off of those results. And so a quote that was from the article from the doctor, she said, "I don't think there's enough recommendations to adopt a pet if you're pregnant to specifically prevent food allergies, just because the data has been so conflicting in the past." And so I think it's good that there is a lot more research and studies that are being conducted in order to answer these questions and kind of push the envelope when it comes to allergy research and allergy studies that are being done. So I think it's a right step in the right direction, but kind of like how the allergist talked about in this article, like if it's based off of a questionnaire, which is very subjective instead of objective, I think that's probably where the question mark comes from the study's findings. But I think it's a good step in the right direction. But if you guys want to look at this article in its fuller entirety, you can check out the show notes to be able to get the link to the full allergy news article that was discussed in this episode. So just check our show notes, be able to look at the article a little bit more in depth. And with that being said, that is this week's allergy news. And we can get right into this week's topic, which is all about whether or not allergies can cause a sore throat / cause you to cough and all of these things. Like I say in these types of episodes, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a medical professional, nor do I claim to be either of those things. These are just things that I know from personal experience and research that I've done, and I encourage you all to do research on your own as well. There are so many allergy symptoms that can affect your day-to-day life, such as having a runny nose and itchy eyes, but have you ever felt like your throat was irritating you and made you want to scratch it raw so much, and you're dealing with a cough and you're like, I don't have a cold. I'm like so confused about like what's going on. Well, if it makes it help more, then you're definitely not alone. With the pandemic and COVID and harsh flu seasons, I feel like it can just be super confusing during this time to just like figure out whether your symptoms like a cough and even a fever are linked to those things or if they're actually linked to your typical seasonal allergies. So today I thought it would be really interesting to dive into whether the cough that you're experiencing during high pollen count days or allergy season, which to be honest is turning into every season, is because of your allergies. Now, if you've had a sore throat, then you know that it is literally one of the most irritating things in the world. And surprisingly, sore throats and allergies go together. Like I used to say, cereal and milk. I know some people say peanut butter and jelly, but I can't have peanut butter. So today it's cereal and milk. Well, if the cereal was sandpaper and the milk was flavored with the molecules of a bunch of flying pollen spores. But before I get into why and possibly how allergies can actually cause a sore throat, I thought it would be good to just start with what actually is sore throat. So a sore throat is having a persistent discomfort in the throat that may get worse when you are swallowing. And actually, when it comes to sore throats, they're divided into different types based on which part of the throat that's affected. So there is pharyngitis, which affects the pharynx, which is the back of your throat. There's tonsillitis that affects the tonsils. So those two small masses of lymphoid tissue on each side of the root of your tongue. There's one on each side. And then there's laryngitis, which affects your larynx, which is the voice box. And I think when most people think of sore throats, they tend to think of like the back of their throat, which is known as that pharyngitis. And it's the kind of sore throat that we typically associate with a cold, a virus, or the flu. And when it comes to cold causing viruses and them entering your body, your immune system attacks those pathogens as a defense mechanism. And the result of that are having the classic cold symptoms like a sore throat, nasal congestion, having a cough, a fever, etc. When it comes to allergies, we've talked about how allergies affects the body, but kind of just to keep it short and simple, your body confuses harmless substance known as allergens like pollen or airborne dust for germs in your body and then attacks them. And so as a defense mechanism, your body is released in this histamine to help with fighting the allergen or the allergens in the same way that your body would fight off a cold. One of the major differences between the common cold and allergies is that allergies are not contagious. Wouldn't it be something if allergies actually were contagious though? Like now that I'm thinking about it, that would be interesting, intriguing, but like also a hot mess. Kind of like a reality show, to be honest. I think it just would be so weird. Like, I think people would realize the impact of allergies. If allergies were contagious, I think that would just be interesting. It's like now going to be stuck in my head the whole entire episode, that whole idea of like allergies being contagious. Anyway, as part of your body overreacts to the allergens that are now in your system starts to produce mucus. It produces a lot of mucus. And the reason why is because that mucus acts like a trap for the allergens, kind of like quicksand. And so allergen particles, they get stuck in that and then they can't get out. And so this falls underneath upper airway cough syndrome, which occurs when people with allergies experience swelling in the nose, and then that swelling leads to mucus production. And if it drains out of the front, that's why you experience runny nose. So when you blow out your nose, then those allergens are coming out along with all of that nastiness that they've been swimming in. But not all that allergen-filled phlegm gets blown out. Some of it drips down the back of your throat, and that's what's called postnasal drip. We did a whole episode about what is postnasal drip, so definitely check out that episode if you're curious about what it is. But with that postnasal drip, it can lead to swelling in your throat. In addition to your throat swelling up because of allergies, postnasal drip can also cause you to frequently want you to clear your throat, and then clearing your throat makes the inflammation that already exists a lot worse, and then therefore makes a sore throat worse. And it's just kind of like this big vicious cycle. Postnasal drip causes a sore throat, so it makes you want to clear your throat, so you clear your throat, then you cough to try to get rid of all the gunk in your system, and then that just makes your throat hurt even more. It's crazy how the body works. Another way allergies can make you cough is from allergic asthma. And I actually think this would be a really great topic for it to have its own separate episode, but in some ways it happens when someone breathes in an allergen like pollen, dust, or animal dander, and then that triggers asthma. And so some symptoms can include like coughing, wheezing, and shortness of breath. And this all happens because of allergic inflammation is in the airways of your lungs and the reactivity of those airways. So when it comes to what is a sore throat from allergies, like how does it feel? So sore throats, it can be described, like I said earlier, as like having that itchy, irritating feeling towards the back of your throat. It can feel really scratchy when you're speaking. It can feel like it's really hard to swallow, and that's because of the inflammation that's going on in your body. Recently, I had a sore throat, and it was just annoying. It was annoying. It felt like my throat was like, I have had enough with you, between, you know, having there be weekends where I would scream for softball, and then I would wake up and my throat muscles would hurt, or having it with the high pollen counts. And there would be days where I would be outside and I could literally feel the pollen get into the back of my throat. And it's not a good feeling. And it just felt weird. I would think that, oh my goodness, I got a fly in my mouth. No, it's a bunch of pollen that's getting in my throat. And it's just so annoying because like I don't think I've ever felt like pollen was getting into the back of my throat, but that's been happening a lot more recently. So I feel like in combination with all those things, I feel like I was just set up for disaster, and like my throat was just, my throat was just not happy. Just felt like my throat was just getting inflamed to the point where my throat was like, I'm done working. You need to like do some things to nurse me back to health because I'm like not okay. So I feel like that's what my throat was doing. And I really had to take time to like not speak a lot. And if you have a podcast, then that's kind of hard to do that. So it definitely was using that time to, you know, do other things, like be able to read or like catch up on television, watch some movies, you know, do some things for myself, you know, on the weekends, while also like pumping myself with tea and water and all of these other herbs to really help with nursing my throat back to health. But yeah, sore throats are like the absolute worst, the absolute worst. And I'll get more into specifics on how to stop an allergy cough or like a sore throat from allergies later on. But yeah, it just sucks so much. In terms of how long does a sore throat from allergies last, it just comes down to how long your allergy symptoms persist. Because as long as your allergy symptoms persist, you will likely experience those symptoms. And if you know your sore throat is caused by allergies, then having an allergy calendar is really going to be helpful to see which allergy season is affecting you. There are many ways to be able to manage and treat allergy symptoms, many of which can help with reducing or eliminating your sore throat too, which is nice and really helpful. But that leads me into how to stop an allergy cough slash a sore throat from allergies. So if you're dealing with an uncomfortable cough or a sore throat from allergies, there are a few things that you can really incorporate into your lifestyle to help with alleviating, you know, this annoying, relentless symptom. Step one, it always comes down to this when you are dealing with an allergy or allergies, is finding out what you're allergic to. I think the easiest way to start with figuring out what treatment could look like for a sore throat from allergies or an allergy cough is really just knowing what's triggering that cough and that sore throat in the first place. So whether going to see your local allergist to be able to get a skin or a blood test to really be able to figure out that allergen so that a doctor can work with you to write up the best plan for treatment. So I always say that's like a first step for anything. If you're trying to figure out, am I allergic to something? Am I not allergic to something? You know, what that case may be, it's always good to start with an allergist. And if you want to learn more about, you know, things to take into consideration when you are going to an allergist for the first time, or even if you're not going for the first time, just different things to think about when you are going to visit a doctor about your allergies, we actually did an episode about that. So we'll have that linked in our show notes. So definitely listen to that episode as well. Another tip is to minimize exposure to allergens. So once you know like what you're allergic to, try to start incorporating strategies to help with minimizing your exposure to said allergens. So you go to an allergist and you find out you have an environmental allergy to X, Y, and Z allergens, then maybe start incorporating things like putting allergen covers on your mattress and your pillows to help with minimizing dust mite exposure. Or if you don't have an air purifier, using an air purifier with a HEPA filter. Just things like that to help with being able to minimize your exposure to allergens if you are allergic to things like pollen or dust, things like that. Another thing that you're going to want to take into consideration is determining the severity of the pollen count in your area. So the most common pollen seasonal allergies are like tree pollen, that's typically from like March to May. Grass pollen is from May through July. And then ragweed is typically starting around August, September. So those are things to also keep in mind as well as you're navigating your seasonal allergies, to just know that those are the types of pollen that are typically known for causing a reaction. And those are the times of the year where you might notice elevated pollen counts for those specific types of pollen. Another thing is like allergy medication. So once you figure out, I have seasonal allergies, I'm allergic to X, Y, and Z, then working with your doctor to figure out what are some good allergy medications that you can take that can noticeably help with relieving your allergy cough or like your sore throat from allergies. There are a lot of different allergy medications out there. So whether you're an Allegra girl or gal, or whether you're a Flonase girl or gal, or whether you're a Benadryl girl or gal, just really working with your doctor in order to figure out what medicines are going to work best for your symptoms that are related to your throat, and then just going from there. So you're probably going to want to look at allergy medications that are taken by mouth that can help with allergy symptoms, both not only in your nose, but also with your lungs as well. Some other things that I have found were really helpful as I was navigating my sore throat was staying hydrated. Staying hydrated is super, 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 super important. And I think that just generally speaking, people don't drink probably as much water as they should. So not only from that standpoint, but really when you're battling this sore throat, you're going to want to keep hydrated, because increasing your fluid intake is really going to help with thinning out that mucus and then moving it out of your throat. So you're going to want to drink extra water. You're going to want to drink hot fluids like tea. Like one of my go-to teas during that time, I loved a good mint medley / peppermint tea. That was really good and really crucial for me. Another thing that I thought was really, really good and helpful was it was this tea from Bigelow. I think it was an echinacea tea that had lemon in it as well. That was really good. I literally pumped myself with vitamin C in terms of tea. So I would use this echinacea lemon tea from Bigelow. I used lemon zinger from Celestial Seasons. I used throat coat from Traditional Medicinals. I just was putting teas on teas on teas on teas. Another one of my favorite teas that's a vitamin C tea is from Celestial Seasonings. I believe it's their Vitamin C Shine. That's also a really, really good one. But literally was trying to pump myself with vitamin C and all the things that are really going to help with keeping me hydrated and moving these allergens outside of my system, or whatever the heck it was, out of my system, and pronto, instantly. Another thing that I know is typically helpful, I didn't use it this time around, but I have used it in the past, is honey. If you are a vegan, then obviously this is probably not the thing for you. If you're trying to, lower your sugar, then honey definitely is not good for you. But just wanted to put this in here as a tip, because honey can help with decrease in inflammation and irritation in your throat. I know it's a lot of people's go-to, so I felt like it would be right to include it in the tips. Another thing that also really helped me was eating ginger, so ginger root. That really helped me a lot with being able to get into the back of my throat and break up whatever the heck was back there. Ginger is known for its medicinal properties in there and really being able to help with decreasing inflammation. So definitely recommend putting some ginger within your rotation if you're dealing with a sore throat. Also, when it comes to teas, ginger tea is also really good to have as well. Another thing that I also had was garlic, so raw garlic. I know it is not the most pleasant smell in the world, but garlic, again, has its own medicinal properties in it that, if you're trying to get better, you just need to put the smell to the side and just do it. Be Nike and just do it. But yeah, garlic really helped me so much. I don't like saying that, but it did, so I have to give it its props. Another thing that really helped me as well was oregano oil. Oregano oil, it is the truth. If you don't have oregano oil on hand for in case something arises in terms of your health, you feel a catches in the back of your throat, it's really good to be able to help with making something that is trying to turn into something stop very early on and quickly. So highly recommend having oregano oil on hand. Usually what you'll want to do when you get oregano oil is mix it with some sort of carrier oil, or you can put it in I've put it in water before. I've seen that you can put it within like juices and things like that to help with curbing the taste. Oregano oil is kind of spicy, but dang, it does the job every single time. So highly recommend checking out oregano oil. It's really good. But those were probably like the main things in my starter kit that really helped get me through my sore throat. Like I was literally drinking so much tea, I was surprised it didn't turn into a teapot. So tea is no joke, especially herbal tea. I highly recommend it. It's so good, not only from like a taste standpoint, but also because it has so many great properties in it, depending on the teas that you pick. Obviously, that can really do so much good for your body. So in terms of being able to help with soothing a sore throat, already talked about drinking lots of fluids, keeping your throat lubricated because it helps with being able to get rid of that scratchiness in the back of your throat. Using a humidifier in your home if you have like dry air in your living environment is really going to be helpful because dry air can actually bring on a sore throat. And if you already have a sore throat and you're in dry air, it can make it feel so much worse. So definitely highly recommend getting a humidifier if you don't own one already. Another tip, like I talked about before, try not to speak for long periods of time. And if you do have to speak, then keep your volume low to avoid having to put any strain on your throat and on your vocal cords. In addition to drinking those warm liquids, like I talked about, like tea, another one that I almost forgot about that just popped in my head that I want to talk about. I've not done it, but I know a lot of people do it because I'm a vegetarian. I'm a pescatarian. I don't eat meat, but I know a lot of people like sipping on broth because that can help with soothing a scratchy throat. So, I think that's a really good tip too. If tea's not really your jam, broth can also do the trick as well. Now, if you're dealing with a sore throat or a cough from allergies due to allergic asthma, then definitely try looking into inhalers with the guidance of your doctor, because an inhaler, it could be beneficial for being able to relax and open up your airways. Inhalers, they are known for being anti-inflammatory, so definitely work with your doctor to see if you do have allergic asthma, if an inhaler would be best for you and your body. But I hope you guys enjoyed this episode and found it to be interesting and you found it to be filled with so much good tips and what did CJ call it? Call them keys. This episode was filled with a bunch of keys. Hopefully it was. I felt like it was. If you guys like this episode, then make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast on your podcast platform of choice. Like I said earlier, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, pretty much any place you can listen to podcasts on. We're available on Amazon, on Audible as well. So literally, any place you listen to podcasts on, we're probably on it. So just give us a subscribe and also make sure that you rate the show. Hopefully your rating is 5 stars. Leave us a review because it really helps with us being able to know what you guys like, what you guys want more of, to be able to make this show the best that it could be. Make sure you follow us on Instagram. Our Instagram is at Oh My Allergies. My Instagram is at Oh My Valencia. And I will talk to you guys in our next episode. Bye, guys.